Podcast, Chicago's home for excellent discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
Welcome back to the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm Dion.
I'm Ron.
Alex here.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Ron, give us those segments we're going to be covering today.
All right, so we got a few. We're going to do or do not. There is no try. This is our segment where we talk about U.S. national metagame, the upcoming metagame at Gen Con, and we'll also cover the new changes on that fact that just got dropped. We have what have you done with those plans. We talk about upcoming events and tournaments, and then our closing notes.
All right, and for anybody who doesn't remember, this is our competitive episode. Our episode that comes out at the end of the month / beginning of the month is our competitive one, and the one that comes out in the middle of the month around the 15th is our more casual one. Here we go.
Always with you, what cannot be done. Hear you nothing that I say. You must unlearn what you have learned. Try not. Do. Or do not. There is no try.
All right, so let's start off with covering the U.S. Nationals. The winner was Duncan Howard playing the list him and his brother always play. Alex, what's that list?
All right, so first off, we have an Omicron group pilot in the Lambda shuttle. And he's got Emperor Palpatine riding shotgun and a sensor jammer. And then we have a TIE Advanced prototype with the Inquisitor, Push to the Limit, TIE V1 title, auto thrusters, and Soontir Fell in a TIE Interceptor with Push to the Limit, Royal Guard TIE title, auto thrusters, and stealth device. And that comes out to 99 points.
And we did have some Rebels represented there. Richard Tsu was 10th place. What was that list, Ron?
Yeah, so Richard Tsu still sticking to his guns, running Biggs and other good stuff. He ran Biggs Darklighter with R4-D6 and integrated astromech, Wedge Squadron Veteran with Draw Their Fire, Weapons Guidance, R2-D2 and integrated astromech, Rourke Garnick with TLT and C-3PO, and Atala Squadron Pilot.
Now, we're really familiar with Duncan Howard's list. It's been out. It's Palpasis, basically, another variation on Palpasis. Now, yeah. One of the things I found curious about Richard's list is the use of weapons guidance, because I never see anybody run weapons guidance.
Yeah. No, I mean, I ran it at Worlds last year, and it was actually really effective. I ran it on Poe. I'm kind of surprised to see it on a Red Squadron veteran. But honestly, it doesn't surprise me. Richard Tsu often will run stuff that just he likes and that no people would do that well with, but I think he's just a good player. And it's one of those things, if you position your ships well and your list isn't terrible, you have a shot.
And another notable thing, he brings C-3PO on a Hawk. Now, usually you see C-3PO on one defense die ships. This one has two. And I asked him about it. I sent him a message. I said, hey, Richard, what did you call with C-3PO? Because usually everybody calls zero. He was calling one every time, or most of the time.
Okay, yeah, that is an interesting choice. I'm kind of surprised by the C-3PO. I would have, if I were playing his list, I'm not really sure about what the weapons guidance is for. Like, I don't see any combos in his list where he's gaining extra, you know, focus, but I probably would have made a change somewhere in this list to find one point and swap C-3PO for Chewbacca, because as I found, Chewbacca on a Hawk is actually amazing.
Yeah, I mean, my thought, you know, with the C-3PO maybe calling one, something along the lines of, you know, you have two evade dice, he's banking on, hey, if I at least get one evade every time I roll my dice, then he's getting two.
Yeah, I get it.
Which makes it really survivable. But yeah, I agree. It's definitely, it was a risk. I'm curious to know the statistics on how well you rolled for that.
Yeah, my green evade dice, you know, are still rolling at that whopping 39% with two dice. I don't know. I mean, there's going to be a lot of times where you just get nothing. And I don't know. Maybe it was good for him. I'm not really sure. It's kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of a weird choice, but I mean, he made it far enough, so it had to be at least decent.
And our top scum list was Jeff Burling. He was third after Swift and second after the cut losing to Duncan Howard. He ran Dengar with the Punishing One title, Lone Wolf, R5P8, Glitterstem, Plasma Torpedoes, Zuckus, and Countermeasures, and paired that with Manaru, also in the Jumpmaster 5000, with Feedback Array, Push to Limit, Unhinged Astromech, Engine Upgrade, and Recon Specialist.
Yeah, I was not surprised by this list at all. I'm actually pretty familiar with Jeff Burling, even though I've only met him one time. One of my really good buddies, Mike Jones, plays in the Ohio metagame where Jeff Burling plays. It's kind of like his arch nemesis. And this is the list that he's been kind of doing very well with. And Mike's always been, you know, going to the finals, and he either has to beat Jeff Burling and win, or he doesn't. And Jeff is really good, and Jeff loves these two ships, and he flies them quite well. They're pretty good. These ships can beat aces, but I didn't get to watch the final game, so I don't know what happened.
Yeah, this is a very similar to what I've been running. I actually been running something very similar to this before I saw this was published. And I'm still trying to figure it out. I haven't done this exact loadout, but I'll definitely be interested to try it.
I've done this exact loadout because Mike gave me Jeff's list to test against, because Mike was looking for a little, you know, advantage and how you can beat this list. And it's quite good. It is a very punishing list to beat. This is kind of what I'm expecting from, Jumpmasters going forward, is these two Jumpmaster lists, one with Dengar, because Dengar with that pilot skill and the ability to reposition, I mean, it's really good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. And before we dive more into what that could be, how that can affect the future meta, let's just kind of take a look at what was in the top 16, Alex.
Okay, so the top 16 breakdown. So for Jumpmasters, we had 6 total lists. None were triple jumps, so no wolf packs. All 4 of the pilots were used. So between Dengar, Tel, Manaru, and the Scout, we saw everybody. We have 3 different Dengar-Manaru pairs, because they're married. You got to pair them up. See, for a notable kind of out there list, so we have Tom Hilton with Drea in the Y-Wing, Auto Blaster Turret, Plasma Torpedoes, Extra Munitions, Guidance Chips, and R4B11. Paired up with Manaru, Deadeye, R4 Agromech, Extra Munitions, Proton Torpedoes, Guidance Chips, Boba Fett, and then tagging along is a Scout with the Deadeye, Overclocked R4, Plasma Torpedoes, Guidance Chips, and Forlom.
You know, I definitely have never seen anybody run R4B11. So, if you're not familiar, R4B11 is one of the salvage astromechs for scum, and it says, when attacking, if you have a target lock on the defender, you may spend the target lock to choose any and all defense dice. The defender must re-roll the chosen dice. So, it's very similar to the Zuckus crew ability, except you just have to have the target lock instead of taking on stress.
Yeah. I've actually seen this before, actually, at our store. Michael Juris was running Drea Renthel for a while with this very similar setup, and it was actually really awesome.
Yeah, I would say on a Y-Wing, the R4B11 is actually better than Zuckus, because, you know, Y-Wing will have a little bit of an issue with stress, so just having the target lock makes it probably a better combo for Drea.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then one of the other notable lists, we had Derek Tokaz running a Bossk in the YV-666 with Crackshot, Concussive Missiles, Zuckus, and Dengar crew, and also paired with Tel Travura in the Jumpmaster 5000 with Push to Limit, Gonk, R5P8, Feedback Array, Hull Upgrade, and Punishing One title. Now, some of the other breakdowns in the top 16, we had 7 lists that were Palp Aces. 6 of them were with the Shuttle, 1 was with the Decimator, but from the 6 that were in the Shuttle, they were exactly the same. It was the same as the winner's list, Jeremy Howard. Not Jerry. The same as Sir
Duncan Howard.
Yes, Duncan Howard. Sorry, Howard Brothers. And there was one swarm list that made it, but it was a different swarm than I've seen around. It was Omega Squadron pilots with Crackshot and Weapons Guidance.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think any swarm list, honestly, if flown correctly, is still very well positioned in the metagame.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we've covered what was at Origins. Now, Gen Con is what's coming up in early August. There are 288 players signed up to play, and the meta is going to be it's going to be different. We have a lot of changes. Like we said, there's a new FAQ, and most recently, the release of Imperial Veterans are going to put some new ships out on the board that we're not used to normally seeing.
Right. I almost think we have to maybe adjust and talk about the FAQ first before we could talk about the Gen Con meta.
All right. I'm fine with that. So let's jump to the FAQ. So it was released on July 1st. It is legal right away. As soon as it was out, it was legal. Alex, before we jumped on, you were talking about there's some regionals in Europe that have to make a decision whether or not they're going to run it with the new FAQ because, like, lists were submitted early. Pretty interesting thing there. But it is legal ASAP.
Yep, it's actually legal retroactively because this was released, what was it, July 1st? And it says effective the 27th, I think. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, Darwin. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah, Darwin, you're going to... if people don't know who Darwin is, Darwin Schaefer is one of our best players. He just won the league championship again, beating our man Dion. And Dion's got a beef, man. Darwin's got to go retroactively. And, his squad was illegal.
Yeah, it was. Sure was. one of the first things I want to cover in the FAQ is the flow chart that FFG made going step by step through the process of attacking somebody. I think it's really important that this is out because there's a lot of confusion as to where things happen, and this chart is real easy for a TO or even another player to explain to someone who doesn't understand why effects work in the order they do.
Yeah, no, I wish I had this the night I was arguing with Robert Juris about BB-8 and Push the Limit and on Poe Dameron.
That was against me.
Yeah, but he was arguing against you, and I was trying to explain to him why it was working, and I was like, I wish I had this list.
So, and the other thing I think is important that FFG came out with it is now FFG has a very – they've – I think they kind of had to retroactively go back and say, wait, guys, how does this actually break down? How do our effects actually work? That way, going forward, we understand the interactions that we're creating.
Yeah, I agree. I think in the article that this was released, there was a little note from Frank Brooks that said, we have so many after combat effects and after attacking effects that they actually had to go back and make this flowchart because now it's become pretty much a requirement.
Absolutely. And understanding, I think a big piece is that all effects take place, any effects take place, and then after all that happens, then a ship is, let's say that it was dying, is then removed from the table. I think that's a huge piece, especially we talked about with Dengar probably being a big deal. We'll get to that in a minute. But the fact that the very last thing that to happen is that the ship is removed is big as opposed to it dies and then none of the effects happen.
Yeah, I mean, because if, like, when I was a TO and we were trying to rule on Dengar, was that, it says when a ship is defeated, immediately remove it from the battlefield, which then kind of conflicted with the Dengar reeling of after defending, then he gets to shoot back.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's scroll through this FAQ and kind of touch on some of the big highlights here.
So the first item that I noticed was Eroded. It was right on page 3, Reinforced Deflectors. Now criticals count for Reinforced Deflectors. So after defending, if you suffered a combination of 3 or more damage, including criticals, you could recover a shield. Makes that card a little bit better.
The next one, which I think is a big deal, is the clarification on spending tokens. What they explained is that for a single... attack, or when you're defending, you can only spend a token once. So, for instance, if you had a ghost that took an evade action and was passed an evade token, you cannot use both evade tokens on that same attack.
Correct.
Because I think it's definitely consistent with the you cannot take, similar to actions, how you cannot take the same action twice. You cannot spend the same thing twice in a row.
Correct. Yeah, for the same instance. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm trying to think of any time in which I had two evade tokens from a single attack and an opportunity to spend them. I can't even remember if that's ever happened.
Right, you've but never sure used Lando so. C-3PO. Now this is ruined.
Yeah, I guess I haven't.
So another clarification, and this is a specific example with Tel Travura, since he has a unique pilot ability. So it's the altered pilot skill. So if you receive the damage cockpit critical that reduces your pilot skill, and let's say you're Tel Travura and you are destroyed for your first time, you discard all your crits and you come back as pilot skill 7. If the ship that had destroyed you was, say, pilot skill 6 or lower, your opportunity to attack has passed, and you will not be able to attack that turn. So I can't think of, well, I guess if you were to able to flip down that crit through other means, that would affect that as well. But it's good that they clarify that, because I know I've had that come up against me when I've played Tel a couple times, so it's good to figure that one out for sure.
And I think another instance that hasn't happened yet, but will be coming with Wave 9, is there are ships that can attack during the activation phase, or at least that's the way we're reading it right now. And if that happens, let's say you're a pilot skill, 8, like you adapt ability down, you have quick draw, and you give Soontir a crit that, what's the crit that drops in the pilot skill 0?
Damage cockpit?
There you go, damage cockpit. We just finished talking about the one. If you give Soontir that damage cockpit crit, that would mean that in the activation phase, he would not have his opportunity to attack because he's pilot skill 0 and the chance is passed. So I think that's definitely something they're kind of pre-preparing for.
I don't know. I don't know if that does that apply to movement as well, because in the clarification, it talks about abilities and attacks. Because in the rules, don't all ships have to at least move in some form? Or execute a movement?
Yeah, I mean, he would still move, but what he's saying is he would miss his opportunity to attack because he was supposed to move attack first at 0.
Well, no, I'm saying if you had the opportunity to attack... So quick draw has the ability that if you take a damage at any time, you get to shoot.
Right.
And if you lay a crit during the activation phase, not during combat...
Right.
On him, and he becomes pilot skill 0, but we have already gone through all the pilot skills.
Right.
Does he lose his opportunity to move?
I think he has to.
I think he has to move. Yeah. I thought you were saying, does he lose his opportunity to shoot?
Shoot, because we haven't got
that. Yeah, because he was talking about the activation phase blocking Soontir from shooting, but I think everybody has to execute a maneuver, and then he would...
Yeah, I think you have to execute a maneuver. I don't think you could skip a maneuver.
Well, we'll wait for that effect.
Right? Yep. More confusing stuff.
Let's cover Dengar. Dengar's ability, if you're not aware, is once per round after defending, if the attacker is inside your firing arc, you may perform an attack against that ship. Now, there's two clarifications that have happened here. If you're Dengar and you're shot by any ship and it would kill you, you still get your retaliation effect, is the first thing that happens. That's still... happens because you're not removed from the board until all effects have taken place. And then the other thing that I thought was really interesting is that Dengar's ability overrides Biggs' Darklighter, which I know for the Rebels, Biggs is a huge piece right now because you're able to mitigate damage different ways. But Dengar's ability surpasses Biggs because it says that you have to attack the person who attacked you.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. The ability triggers off of the ship that attacks you, so that's the only ship you can attack. Biggs can't redirect it.
So with Dark Curse, there was a clarification made at the end of the previous facts, so I'll just read the whole thing. So Dark Curse can be the target of a secondary weapon attack that requires the attacker to spend a focus token. Because Dark Curse becomes the defender, after the cost for the attack is paid. So that feeds into how the new timing works, because you're not spending such and such token as part of the attack. You're spending the token just to start the attack, basically.
Right, as a cost for it.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Just a slight clarification on Miranda. If she's using TLT to attack, you can use her ability on the first or the second attack. Yeah. Because they're two nested attacks. Small one, but important. Like, when I play against people who play Miranda, they always will change the first one. But when I play her, I always used to do the second one. I had a couple people arguing with me about it, but because I would like to see, do I get my shot through first? Yeah, I got one through. Great, here. I feel okay with recovering.
Yeah, that's how I always did it, too. Let's see what else we got. I've got more Omega Leader clarification.
You know, at the eventually, Omega Leader is going to be her own page. She will have her own page. So the clarification for Omega Leader is understanding the difference between adding and subtracting dice and adding dice results. So adding dice results is a modification of dice. Adding actual dice to your dice pool before you roll them happens before the modified dice step, which is on our flowchart, which by now you should have that out while you're listening to this, because we're going to be referencing it quite a bit. It happens before, so, you know, things like Jan Ors, for instance, works.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always, I think that's just a clarification. That's always how I've ruled it.
They also added a new part further down that also further clarified that you also can't make Omega Leader modify her dice, because there was the argument that Omega Leader only locks you as the attacker from modifying your die, but you can force Omega to reroll, say with like Zuckuss. Can't use Zuckuss on Omega because it locks any sort of modifications, so that helps Omega Leader even further.
Yeah, Omega Leader is gross. Poor Valor Rudor got nerfed.
Again.
Nobody plays that guy.
I know. And they're just like, let's keep nerfing this guy.
I mean, it's a cool... He's got a cool ability. I liked it until the first nerf happened.
Yep, and then the second.
So, let's see. Youngster, that was already, I thought, pretty clear. I guess they needed to clarify that more.
Yeah, that's nothing. We don't need to talk about that.
Let's see what else we got. We got Boba. Boba officially doesn't care about anything.
Yeah.
And the extra munitions, like, that got brought up the other day.
Yeah, so
that's a good one to go over.
If you get Boba Fetted and somebody says, all right, I want to Boba Fett your proton torpedo, but if you have extra munitions, the token comes off first, which I think makes sense because it does say on extra munitions you discard the token in any case that you would discard the card.
Correct. Now, the question is, what if I were to Boba the... Oh, wait, no, it says including the... Never mind. It says...
It does.
I was wondering if you could kill all the ordnance tokens by Boba-ing the extra munitions itself.
Yeah, and Chewbacca's upgrade card, we know about this, but Chewbacca's upgrade card, the ability to discard a damage card does not prevent the card from being dealt, so Boba still triggers, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
That's nothing new.
Because the card still comes out for the damage.
It still gets dealt, and that's what Boba requires.
You can still use Chewbacca to get rid of the damage, but Boba will still trigger.
Let's talk about Gonk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gonk is too...
suck.
Yeah, it doesn't suck. Cover it, Ron. Go ahead.
Gonk just allows you to use the ability twice if you have the opportunity to. So it doesn't take you two turns to recover a shield now.
Yeah, just one. I always thought it was that way, or it should be that way, because they specifically listed action for the top part, which is place a shield on the card, and then a separate action header for removing the shield off the card, putting it on the ship.
Yeah,
I think that was how it was originally intended, and then they thought, well, maybe just regeneration might be too good, look what R2 does, but this thing is nowhere near as good as
R2. Yeah, you have to invest in experimental interface just to get the one turn, one shield regen, and we all know FFG is very deliberate with their wording on things, so if they wanted this to be one action, they would have just made it place one shield token or remove one shield token. They wouldn't have done the two action headers.
Yeah, and you can also do it. I don't know if it's worth it doing it with push to limit, but you could also do push to limit.
No, you can't, because
you can only push on things that are on your action bar.
You can only push action bar stuff.
Learning on the Gold Squadron.
Experimental interface is the one you can do upgrade action cards.
Correct. Yep. You're spending a lot of points to, and most notably, two actions to recover a shield, whereas like R2's just, take a green, get a shield, still take all
it's
your
It's just
actions.
A way for scum to have some sort of regen. It's just notably worse.
Correct.
And then Darth Vader, it wasn't nerfed, but it was a clarification, maybe because the Empire is going to get an ability to be able to shoot something twice that could have Darth Vader on it. But a clarification that if you can perform an attack twice, something similar to Twin Laser Turret, you can only Vader once off of those.
And
two
it has
attacks.
To be the second attack.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm fine with that. I mean, it's not, you know, some people were freaking out thinking that you couldn't use this with Gunner, but those are two separate
attacks.
Yeah,
I initially read it wrong. I initially read it as, if you perform a second attack, not secondary weapon attack. So I was freaking out at first, too, because I love my Decivator.
Yeah, I don't think that would change that. I mean, this is one of those great cards that more people should be using in keeping aces of the world in check.
Soontir hates this card.
Soontir, Omega Leader, everyone. They all hate this card.
Blow them up.
Now, what's this fire control system nerf?
This is kind of like Vader. You can only do it on the second attack. So you can't TLT, fire control, reroll them all?
Oh, okay.
What can take a system out of turret right now? The ghost?
Yep, the ghost.
Yeah, for right now, so.
Yeah, because they did make it so that now if you're the ghost and you have the phantom title with the ship docked, you can get the full benefit of TLT with the extra turret attack.
That's probably why they did this. Just to do that, too.
Ugh, a lot of points.
Too many points.
See, Gunner clarification goes in with the perform this attack twice. Both attacks must miss for Gunner to activate. So you can't just do a TLT, hit the first time, miss the second time, start it over again. As long as one of those two attacks hit, Gunner will not trigger.
Another interesting one that we're coming up to right now. Kanan Juris, he's new in the FAQ. And this, I think, is really cool. So it explains that Kanan's ability triggers after the cleanup sub-step of the execute maneuver step. So this means that if a friendly ship at range 1 to 2 would execute a white maneuver and overlaps a debris cloud, Kanan still can remove that stress token.
Why did they make it better? I mean,
because they didn't want to kill the Falcon's white sloops already. Because this definitely cements that'll work.
He's so good already. It's crazy. I mean, it doesn't affect Fat Dash with him, but man, that's crazy.
What it does, what it can do though, is make some of those other YT-2400s maybe more viable. It kind of do similar-ish things to Dash.
Yeah. They just make Kanan better.
Whatever ship he's okay with on, that's going to be pretty good.
Yep.
Awesome.
I guess we should talk about the R3A2 nerf that's kind of big.
Yeah.
If a ship equipped with R2A2 performs a secondary attack that says perform this attack twice, this ability can only be used on the first attack because the target is not declared again during the second attack.
Well, is it really a nerf, though? I think maybe it's more of a
clarification. I thought that was always the case.
Yeah, that's true. That's true,
with
actually.
Stress bot, it was always two if you're doing the title and everything.
Right.
Yeah. I think the one that you're thinking about
Tactician's the one
Tactician, that's what it was.
Tactician got nerfed hardcore. So,
which I don't know why, but okay.
I think it's because of the ghost. They made the ghost able to do both attacks of the TLT and they said, "Hey, we can't let the ghost go and force stress people."
Oh yeah.
You know?
That's fair.
Yeah, that would be crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, if you have a TLT, so for instance, right now, or I guess not anymore, but you used to be able to see a lot of K-Wings with Tactician and TLT, and you would double stress people that way, which was one of the big lists at Worlds, I believe, Danger Zone?
Mm-hmm.
With triple K-Wings with Tactician and TLT. That list doesn't work anymore, unfortunately. because of the rule.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Guess it's time to go back to my Trandoshan Slaver with Boss and Tactician and Gunner.
I was thinking the same thing last night when I was reading this.
Let's see. Zeb is new to the fact, too. It just clarifies that he's only active during the combat phase, so anything that happens in the end phase, such as the Ghost end attack or Corrin, does not apply. It was just further clarifying that that's how the card worked. It wasn't really a change.
Well, that's good, because let's say there's a Ghost with Auto Blaster Turret. They cannot double tap you if they have Zeb, if you're touching.
Have we talked about R4 Agromech?
No, I think we're saving that.
I think saving that one. Let's see. Let's go for it.
That's pretty much it, honestly.
Let's go for it. Go ahead, Ron.
All right, so the big one that everyone's kind of been freaking out about, you know, all triple jump masters are dead, which is not true, is the R4 Agromech nerf. Basically what this says is target large acquired using R4 Astromech's ability may be used during that attack. If a ship equipped with R4 Agromech is attacking with a secondary weapon that requires the ship to spend a focus token such as Blaster Turret or any weapon used with Deadeye, that ship cannot acquire target lock on the defender because the enemy ship becomes the defender after the cost is paid. See timing chart for your new flow chart.
What that means is that they finally stopped Blaster Turret. The reign of the Blaster Turret is over.
Yeah, so anybody who has run Triple Jump Master, played against Triple Jump Masters, knows that they would spend the focus to fire their torpedo with Deadeye. And it used to be ruled that, hey, you spent it during your attack, and that means you get the target lock, and you had that extra modification plus guidance chips to probably get 4 hits every time.
Correct.
But that's not the case anymore, because like Ron read, you know, the spending that focus is the cost to attack. It doesn't happen during the attack steps.
Right. Yeah, they changed the timing on it so that you don't get that additional dice modifier. So maybe you'll get hit for 3 out of 4 instead of 4 out of 4 if you're still using this card. But I suspect most people will just switch to the other Astromech. The overclocked Astromech, and just deal with stress and do the same thing to hit you for 4.
I think someone did the statistics. It takes it from like 85% chance of hit down to like 70s. So they're still going to be hitting hard, but now they have that stress on top of it. So
yeah, I think, you know, what it is going to do is people who are playing, still going to play Triple Jump Masters, because you'll still see it, they'll have to I'll borrow from Minot. They're going to have to fly better.
Yeah, you'll have to fly better, and then your list also becomes susceptible to other stress mechanics.
Absolutely, because you know, they're going to take overclocked R4, which causes them to take a stress to keep that focus token so they can use it for their attack. And then after that, they can only do 1 or 2 forward, or, you know, their moves to the left. And if you box them in a way where they can only move to the right, you have the advantage on the Jump Master.
And you could also, you know, start stacking stress on one, because, you know, 1 is not that big of a deal, but when they get 2 in a turn, that's when it becomes a problem.
And if they are forced to not take a green and just kind of fight you head on, their primary is only 2 dice, so they're down to much more less effective attack power.
Yep, and then they won't be able to get any actions the following turn, which, you know, limits their accuracy.
I think overall it was a good way to curb them. A lot of people were saying, "Oh, remove the EPT slot," and, you know, I will be amazed the day that FFG directly affects a ship's card stats versus just FAQing upgrades.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely, because if they would start changing cards, I think the first thing they do would be make Twin Laser Turret 7 points, or something like that. But we haven't seen FFG directly change, you know, card stats or costs.
No, they just play with the wording.
Mm-hmm. And that's in any game you play. That happens all the time.
Well, that's not true.
A lot of other stuff, FFG's
yeah. others games, I apologize. FFG has never changed costs. They have just changed the wording.
I thought Imperial Assault there was a unit that had something changed. I don't play, but I thought I heard.
Yeah, there was. There was some units that were changed, and the rumor was going to be that the cost was going to be changed, but instead they just changed all the wording and released new cards.
And then in the fifth section of the FAQ, they added a couple more questions. I know, Ron, when the day the Ghost was released, we were reading through that book, and the way it was worded with the torpedo in the back, we got excited that, hey, maybe you can shoot torpedoes at any range. They did clarify that and said, no, the range values printed on torpedoes are still used.
I'm glad they printed that, because I was kind of irritated that like no one brought that up.
No, it's huge. It's huge because if you read it word for word and understanding how FFG is really good with their words, you know, they try to be really meticulous about it. You could extrapolate from the original wording that, hey, you could just shoot any torpedo at any range you feel like it.
That would have been a great ability for the Ghost.
I think so, too.
Speaking of meticulous wording, so they also added into the questions about, I'll just read it out. So can a ship that deploys from another ship, such as the Nashtaw, Pup, or Phantom, perform any maneuver on its dial? And yes, they can. And Dion, you were telling me the reason they put this in is because for the Phantom, it says when you deploy, you put rear guides to rear guides, so people were arguing that you couldn't do a K-turn out the back of the Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes.
So now, for any deployment, so that includes, for right now, that is the Nashtaw Pup, the Phantom, or in Epic, you have your Gazanti Cruiser. You can start out with a K-turn or a sloop, if you want.
Can any of those even... Oh, no, yeah, That's cool. The Typhos, never mind.
So now, let's kind of roll back in our agenda and take a look. How is this going to affect our Gen Con meta? So we know that Imperial Veterans is going to be out, and we have this new FAQ. 288 players. It's going to be a bloodbath.
I think we should talk about the top tier lists that are the current top tier lists that are still going to be top tier, and what we think can take those lists down.
Yeah.
So, when talking about Gen Con meta, I think we need to say that the top tier lists are still going to be Palp Aces, Swarm, Dual Jump Masters. You'll probably still see a few Triple Jump Masters, but I think the Dual Jump Masters with higher pilot skills where it's at on those lists. Rebels are still going to have a presence, and actually I feel Rebels can make a stronger presence now that you won't see so many triple jump master perfect alpha strikes. You can bring back your Rebel R3A2 TLT Y-Wing with Poe Dameron and that kind of stuff, which is nice because those kind of lists actually kept the Aces in check. And then now we're going to throw TIE Defenders into the mix. I think they're absolutely going to be a tier one list. I think you're going to see a bunch of them. And to me, it looks like they're going to be very good at dealing with Aces. I have not play tested it yet, personally. I'm not a Vassal player. But have you guys play tested it? What do you guys think?
Yes. I've played it both on Vassal, and actually yesterday I was playing a couple of practice games against it. Triple Defenders are really good. Personally, I think the X7 title is better than the TIE D.
I think the only thing you're probably going to auto-include the TIE D is going to be Vessery. It really is made for his ability. Points willing, because you also have to throw in the cannon in there. So if you don't have the points, he's just going to get the X7 like everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, they were... So what I did is I played Palp Aces against the triple defenders and tried to find out, all right, if I'm the defender player, how do I want to set up against Palp Aces? And vice versa. If I'm a Palp Aces player, what can I do to, you know, mitigate some of the advantages that the defender has. Now, Soontir, with all his boost and barrel rolls, has a better chance, has probably the best chance out of all the aces to really be effective. I'm going to say my opinion is that the Inquisitor versus Defenders is not going to be as good. Because the Inquisitor likes to stay kind of in a box, you know, doing those hard ones. And then once in a while, he'll shoot forward and then create a box in another spot. But those K turns, you're gonna catch the Inquisitor in your arc all day. With being able to K turn and barrel roll, the barrel roll is huge for the Defender. And if somebody's crazy and puts, you know, PTL and an engine upgrade on, let's say, Countess Ryad, because I think she's the one that can really, really affect some of the arc dodgers, if you're good at guessing. You know, you can really do some, really catch those aces in your arc that are just going to have a hard time getting away.
I totally agree. And one of the lists that I think is going to be overlooked until people at least watch this, listen to this podcast and try it out is Sozin's Imperial A-holes list. I think that list, Wampa with Karner Jax, PTL, and auto thrusters, Pelt Mobile, and Omega Leader is actually quite good.
I've played that against a triple defender list, and it worked out pretty good. So I think that list is still pretty strong versus defenders. Now, I was going to ask you, what do you think is going to be the better variation? Do you think it's going to be triple defenders or ace plus defender or maybe palp ace defender?
I think Palp Ace Defender is going to be pretty good. I still think Triple Defender is great. I mean, three of those ships with Focus and Evade tokens, man, it's just going to be brutal to get damage around those ships. And vice versa, when you have it in a Palp meta and you can change a die, that's going to also be brutal to kill those ships. That's why I really like I think Sutrafel is really well positioned for Gen Con. I mean, I would not be surprised if Lyle just showed up and was like, hey, I'm running Imperial A-holes again, and I'm going to go 14-0 in the Swiss like he did during his time with that list.
Yeah. Now, one thing I did to prepare for our podcast is I jumped on Vassal and tried to set up a lot of different deployments and engagements between a defender and a TIE interceptor. I mean, most of the time, you know that you should never line up an interceptor straight across from a jouster. I mean, that's just, I think, you know, aces 101. You don't ever set up straight across and go straight at it. If you want a chance to get out of the arc and get a shot, you want to be on the outer third of their arc at range 3. You know, if you can take one shot, if you want your opportunity to get a really good range 1 engagement, after they do their K turn, you can then do your hard 2 barrel roll boost, and you'll still have a shot. But I tried to place Soontir Fel somewhere in that middle third of like starting in that arc, and I could not figure out how to get Soontir out of the arc. You would always get a shot and not get a shot back.
Yeah,
and it's that ability to be able to flip that K turn back and forth. You know, if you don't engage the defender correctly, you might be able to get out of the arc, but you'll never get a shot.
And sure.
And if there's three defenders going after
Soontir.
Yeah, going after Soontir or any type of other arc dodger, it's going to be tough. I think definitely aces have found something that is going to counter them a little harder than anything else.
Right, and that's why I like Sozin's list, because you don't necessarily have to go crazy and arc dodge, get in there with Karner Jax and push the limit. Karner's spending tokens, that defender's not. Wampa's ability to just lay damage directly on the hull of a defender and just ignore the shields, very relevant. Omega Leader not being able to get to spend those focus, spend those evades. I think that's a really solid choice.
Let's cover the TIE D title, because I have also playtested a little bit against that. If you're not familiar with it, you can attack with a cannon first and then with your primary, but it cannot cost
more than 3.
More than 3 points. So that means you have your tractor beam, flechette cannon, ion cannon. And I played against a couple of these on Vassal, and if you're flying anything that has, you know, two evade or less, two agility or less, and you get caught in an arc by one of these, you're going to have some trouble. Especially if somebody has that tractor beam. I think this TIE Defender is going to be one of the first ones that really makes that tractor beam shine.
Yeah.
Totally.
Another flavor is the Ion Lock. You get three defenders with ions and just stay behind someone and ion them off the board. That's what a lot of people are having fun with.
Yeah, you just create an aisle.
That does not sound like fun. You guys have the wrong definition of fun.
I like cheese lists. That's fun for me.
The other thing that came in our Imperial Veterans pack is the bomber. Now, I know that the Defender is, you know, the sexy version, right? Everybody's paying attention to that. But I definitely think some of our more cunning players are going to figure out how to take advantage of some of the things we got with the bomber.
Yeah, I think the bomber's highly underrated. I'll be honest with you, I have a huge passion for this ship. I own 7 bombers now. And I plan to deploy them in our epic league play coming up next week. So I played 4 Gammas yesterday. Mm-hmm. I tried 2 different lists. All of them basically ran extra munitions, plasma torpedoes, long-range scanners. And I just kept playing with the different combinations of missiles and torpedoes. And also EPTs. I couldn't decide between Crackshot or Deadeye. Deadeye was hugely helpful when it, you know, came into play. But then, man, Crackshot was so huge too, like just getting through that extra damage when you needed to take a ship off the board. So I definitely need to play more than 2 games with it, but the bombers are definitely back, and there's going to be some clever swarm players that I think are going to figure out how to play these.
Now, I find it interesting with the list that you said you've tried out that none of the bombers – did any of the bombers have actual bombs?
None. I was running a this was a more of a trying to take advantage of having a 5 pilot skill ship with 2 great alpha attacks and then take advantage of the EPT. I would love to somehow get like a bomb and a plasma or a bomb and some kind of missile, but it doesn't really work unless you drop down to the very cheapest ship. But then you risk losing a ship before it even fires.
Yeah, and that's what I've kind of predicted is what's going to happen, is they're just going to be missile and torpedo carriers and not really actual bomb carriers.
Yeah, they could be bomb carriers. I think it's going to take a little time for someone to figure it out. But again, I don't think bombs are really good without some kind of ability to make bombs inherently better, like Sabine does for the Rebels.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. One of the other pilots that came in that I've been playtesting a little bit is Tomax Bren. That ability to have a reusable EPT that you usually discard. You know, the easy one is Crackshot.
I actually don't think that's the best one, but I agree with you.
Yeah, I think, that's the easy one. It's the one that comes in the pack. That's the one they kind of point, I think they like obviously point to and say, hey, just do this, which does work well. I will say in a game that I played on Vassal, somebody flanked me with a bomber, and I ignored it because I was trying to take care of their aces first and get it off the board. And I had this, you know, little 2-dice bomber behind me with Crackshot, and it annihilated me. It was bad. So don't let Tomax Bren get behind you.
Yeah, I actually...
Well, one of the things I like is Adrenaline Rush with that ship.
Remind us what Adrenaline Rush does.
So Adrenaline Rush says, when you reveal a red maneuver, you may discard this card to treat that maneuver as a white maneuver until the end of the activation phase. So bombers, the biggest disappointment with bombers, and especially like high pilot skill bombers like Tomax, is that their dial sucks. Like the hard 2 is red, and they don't have a lot of good maneuvers. And being able to perform a hard 2, still take your action, or perform a 5K turn and still take your action is really awesome, especially with long-range scanners. You could perform your 5K turn, be out at 3 range or beyond, still acquire your target lock so that on the next turn you can target lock focus and torp them.
I like that too.
So I think with Tomax Brennan, you're going to see a lot of those EPTs, which you don't really see a lot of use for, because how often have you seen Adrenaline Rush used ever?
Oh, exactly. Adrenaline Rush and Cool Hand both seem really interesting. Cool Hand being where you get to basically, after you perform a red mover, you get a focus or an evade token. I just like Adrenaline Rush a little bit better. It's the same thing. You just get to do any
action. So speaking of Cool Hand, I'm actually going to kind of go off on a tangent. So I told you guys that I'm doing a list head-to-head with the Back to Dials guys, and it's going to be that list that I put on the Pastimes Facebook the other day. Did you guys get a chance to see that?
Yeah.
All right, so it's going to be Tomax Brenn with Cool Hand, Twin Ion Engine Mark II, TIE Shuttle title, Fleet Officer, and Rebel Captive, paired up with two Glaive Squadron pilots with Juke and the TIE X7 title. So the combo on a optimal turn is the Glaives are going to do their 3-4-5 speed maneuver, get their evade, take a target lock action, and then Tomax is following nearby, going to give them both their focuses with Fleet Officer, take a stress, and with Cool Hand, when he gets the stress, he gets a focus or evade. So you're going to have a two fully tokened up defenders, hopefully every turn.
Yeah, that's super sweet.
That's awesome. Are you going to? I'm assuming you're going to fly them in formation.
Yeah, as long as I can until hopefully something doesn't hit the fan.
That's awesome. What is
I am playing against Asa. And
I don't
have the whole list in front of me. I was having it built in a squad builder and I closed it on accident. But I know he had Cath Scarlet. I think he had a bomber in there too. But it's very. There's a lot of control. There's a lot of Imperial control. It was actually kind of the funny thing that when both our lists came together, that I had the Rebel Captive and he had some other forms of control. So that's going to be a fun match. We'll post that on the Facebook page.
Awesome. That's going to be a lot of fun. Little Back to Dials Gold Squadron podcast rivalry. This meta that we're used to is definitely changing. We have new ships coming in. I'm really excited to see the changes that happen. You know, Gen Con is going to be definitely a place where we have, let's see, what's today's date? Today is July 2nd. We have a month to figure out what is it that we need to run or what is it that we're going to want to run for Gen Con. And, you know, everybody has to go. You have to practice defenders. You have to practice playing them and against them. And, you know, understand that the Jumpmaster is not necessarily dead, but you know, it's definitely weakened a little bit. Understand that bombers, you might see bombers. Don't sleep on them for sure.
I'll be at Gen Con, so you'll definitely see bombers.
All right, so I know Alex, you're not going to be able to
not this year,
right?
Unfortunately.
All right, so Ron and I will be at Gen Con. Super excited. I don't know what I'm going to play yet. Ron, I know we're going to see bombers from Ron.
There's no doubt. I mean, I might be at the back table, but bombers are going to be deployed.
I like it. So if you see us at Gen Con, you know, come over, say hi. We might have our Gold Squadron shirts by then.
We will. Yay. Have them. We will have them, and at the very least, we will also have some Pastime shirts, so if you see us in black and gold, come by, say hi.
Yeah, and another thing, this is a surprise to you guys, too. I'm going to do a little bit of a secret contest at Gen Con. There'll be more details coming, but there's some pretty cool Gold Squadron podcast swag coming in. I paid for it myself. I'm super excited about it, and we'll talk about it later. But
we're going to do something cool. I'm excited then.
Yeah, you're going to have to track us down to get some of this swag, but yeah, it's going to be sweet. So let's go into our next segment, which is
Where are those transmissions you intercepted? What have you done with those plans?
All right. So, as we've been talking quite extensively, we have the North American Championship at Gen Con. That's going to be August 4th through the 7th. I don't think all those days are X-Wing, though, right, guys?
No. Thursday, Friday are day one of X-Wing. Saturday, I believe, is day two, if you make it to day two.
And there's definitely other X-Wing events. Like, I'm doing a couple of furballs and trench run. There's other little casual X-Wing stuff
going on. Yeah, you guys are making me bummed.
Yeah, so I want to talk about that real quick. There's this really fantastic group that you guys and most people probably are not aware of, and I feel like we should boost them a little bit. I know them quite well. It's the Chicago Miniatures Gaming Group. This group is run by all the old Star Wars Wizards of the Coast miniatures players. Guys like Tim Ballard, Derry Morgan, Joe Vasilian, Eric Larson. These guys run old Star Wars miniatures events, and they'll do things like the Hoth battle, the Geonosian arena battle, but they also run X-Wing related events. Like, that's what that trench run is. They have an event where you can like attack a super star destroyer. Their events are awesome. Their prizes are super sweet. They're made mostly by Eric Larson, where I think last year he made a little trophy that was a complete cutout of Vader, Backstabber, and Mauler Mythil coming down the trench.
That's awesome.
That's cool. I love the definitely the thematic kind of casual events thing. It's a nice way to change up the 100-point dogfight stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons, I'll be honest with you, I'll take something like Bombers to Gen Con. You know, I don't plan on doing as well at Gen Con just because there's so much stuff other to do that even though I love X-Wing, I don't know if I want to commit 3 days to playing X-Wing.
I get it. But then when we go to Worlds...
Well, then it's on like Donkey Kong. There's nothing else to do than to Star Wars it up.
Awesome. And then what are our local events that are going on, Ron?
So we got a couple things. It's July, so we have a whole new month of events, starting with our very first event, which is Epic X-Wing League Play. So starting the first Wednesday in July, which would be July 6th, 5 p.m. till store closing, you can sign up for League Play. The League will be Epic Play, meaning instead of playing our normal two matches per week, you have to play one match per week, following all Epic guidelines and rules. You can have a different list each week. You don't have to have the same list the whole time. At the end of 7 weeks, I take everybody's best score for the first for 4 weeks, and then we have a little bit of a playoff on the last week. Prizes are ridiculous. If you don't follow us on pastimes.net/StarWars, which is our Facebook group, or Gold Squadron podcast Facebook group, you can see pictures of what I gave away for the last league. I gave away almost $500 worth of promos and swag.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we price.
We are spoiled.
You guys are spoiled, and I get comments from other people like, how do you give this stuff away? It doesn't make any sense. I don't know.
Well, we have a big play group. We have a lot of people, you know, putting in the pool to be able to purchase the stuff, and we also have a really great store that supports us. Like, I don't know, it's nothing like I've ever seen in any other kind of business. I mean,
it's huge. I mean, Alan, the guy that owns Alan Hotchman, if you don't know who he is huge TO in the Magic scene for years, Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh. He has been fully willing to support us and all of our Star Wars endeavors, all of our Star Wars gaming, supplying us with the boards, play mats. I mean, what store do you go to where there's 30 play mats for people to use? All those boards that we put down the table so you have nice flat playing surfaces. And then he also, you know, helps us acquire prize support, and pretty much whatever we need. It, you know, they allow us to do the 20% off on pre-orders, free promos for demos, 20% off on your first purchase. I mean, it really is a testament to a good partnership between us and Pastimes.
Yeah.
We also have I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what were you going to say?
No, go for it. Go for it.
We also have a bunch of other events coming up. We have Armada League play now. We've been doing this now for, I think this is our third go around. We have a very healthy group of Armada players. We play every Thursday, 6 p.m. till close. The Armada League is quite similar to the Epic League, where you play one match per week. Exact same format. You know, you score points for winning. Best 4 weeks determines, you know, who's in the top eight, and there, or top eight, I would say top four. We haven't had 30 guys like we have for X-Wing. And then we have all the monthly events in July. So July 10th is Imperial Assault. That's our Imperial Assault demo and game day. You can come out, demo, play, jump in right away, play some skirmish games of Imperial Assault, or you could just come by with your friends and play campaign if you wish to do so. The 17th, we have my personal favorite, Star Wars the Card Game, which I just taught Alex how to play.
Awesome.
Did you like that, Alex? Yeah, what a great game. All of these games, by the way, are all demo and game days where you can come out, learn how to play, get some swag, jump right in and play a game. July 24th is our monthly Armada event. This is also a demo and game day. We play two rounds of Armada, hand out prizes, and then the big one, July 31st, our X-Wing demo and game day, which is going to be slightly more competitive. This is going to be really everyone's last chance at practicing before Gen Con. Gen Con, everyone's going to be leaving on Tuesday or Wednesday to go to Gen Con. So if you want to get your list in, you want to practice, come to Pastimes. We have amazing players. We're going to have a huge event, lots of prizes. All these events start at noon. That's where you're going to do your demos. That's where you're going to register. And then dials will go down at 1, and we'll have a good time.
Yeah, I mean, the more people we have that come out to that July 31st preparation tournament, the better of a practice experience is going to be. It's going to be fantastic. I'm excited.
No doubt.
Alrighty. So, I want to thank everybody for listening to the Gold Squadron podcast. We really appreciate it. If you haven't yet, please go to our Gold Squadron page and like our Facebook group. I know from our listener statistics, we have a lot of people listening to the show, but not that many people in our group or are liking our page. So just take a second, go and do that, show us some support. That would be really appreciated. We are also on Twitter, if you prefer Twitter, and that is at Gold Squadron. If you have any questions, please email us at goldsquadronpodcast@gmail.com. We are definitely open up to, you know, constructive criticism. Also out there right now is I'm collecting names and emails for listener participation in our X-Wing trivia, which is going to be a lot of fun for our casual episodes. If you're in the Chicagoland area, please feel free to join our local play group, which is pastimes.net/Star Wars, and that will jump you to our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, everybody. Ron, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was MIA in Vegas last time you guys recorded.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, we can't talk about that.
Alex, always good to be here. All right, thanks for listening. Gold Squadron out.